Happy New Year, and it's a privilege to welcome you back to our first episode of 2026 of In the Money. I'm Roberta King, a Vice President and Branch Leader with Fidelity Investments, and I'm definitely looking forward to today's conversation with the one and only Tony Zhang, who is Chief Market Strategist of Options Play. Tony is also a frequent CNBC guest. Tony, welcome. It's great to be back with you today.
Thank you so much, Roberta. Happy New Year to everyone. It's great to be back in 2026 and looking forward to the new year.
Likewise. So for everyone watching, today is Thursday, January 8th. And of course, we all continue to have a watchful eye on the markets and how they're responding to not only geopolitical news, but also recent economic news events. So Tony, it's time to get today's conversation started. And let's start with your macroeconomic view. What are you observing, or what has your attention today?
Yeah, absolutely. Before we dive into that macroeconomic view here, I think we should take a look at kind of how we ended the year in 2025 and what we're looking at the beginning of 2026. You know, we essentially ended the year just shy of that 7,000 psychological level on the S&P 500. There was a lot of optimism going into the end of the year with regards to the growth in corporate earnings that we were going to get a decent start to 2026. And so far, we have managed to eke out a new all-time high at the beginning of this year. We are within spitting distance of that $7,000 level here, a major psychological level here. However, so far, the momentum has been somewhat lacking towards the beginning of this year so far. We initially tried to clear above that 6,925 resistance level here with the bullish momentum relatively intact, hoping that the markets can make that final push to that 7,000 level and above. But so far, we seem to have lost a little bit of steam here. We're actually just slightly below that 6,925 level here currently. The downside risk we see here is a pullback to around 6,825, the first minor support here to the downside. If we break below 6,825, we're looking for more downside below that. But overall, you know, we've got an interesting start here to the year. Venezuela was obviously a bit of a surprise for a lot of investors. Certainly ratchets up geopolitical tensions here again to start off the year. Certainly increases volatility in the oil markets at the moment, which with oil crude prices actually lower after the Venezuela headlines, you know, this is going to be somewhat helpful from an inflation print perspective. Economic data so far of 2026 has been fairly mixed. We had ISM manufacture come in significantly worse than expected, which initially supported rate cut expectations for this year. But then ISM services came in much stronger than expected and sort of reversed that a little bit. So we're seeing a fairly mixed picture from an economic picture perspective. The 10-year yield remains a fairly challenging environment for equities right now. The 10-year yield still shy of 4.2% despite the recent rate cut that we've seen. And this is acting as a bit of a cap here for equities, even though largely equities has ignored or shrugged off the higher interest rate environment. I do think that heading into 2026, this is something that's going to come to a head a little bit with regards to just the sheer number of stocks in the you know, the Russell 2000 or rather the Russell 1000 that are you know, what we call zombie companies, companies that you know, do not generate enough profits to service their debt. So as equities, as interest rates remain relatively high, this is going to be a problem for a larger number of stocks. Now, on the flip side, you have AI continuing to contribute optimism here to the broader economy from both a productivity perspective as well as from an earnings growth perspective. We saw a lot of the storage names, you know, see a really strong start to 2026 after NVIDIA made comments with regards to, you know, the use of these specific components to their GPU chips and also just the increased demand they continue to see here from their next generation of chips. And you know, we have an environment over the last few months where market breadth continues to improve. You have the equal weight S&P 500 index making new highs at the moment, and at the moment, we're really paying attention to, a couple of major economic numbers that are coming out here over the next few days. You have December job numbers coming out tomorrow morning. That's going to be a major driver of sentiment here for the first half of 2026. You also have the CPI print coming out next Tuesday. Not to mention, you have earnings season kicking off at the end of next week. You have Delta, you have JP Morgan, you have Bank of New York. These are all going to provide us a glance into what the earnings season is going to bring us, but more importantly, what 2026 is likely going to shape into, specifically from a banking and consumer perspective.
Thank you for the reflection. A lot of content here and a lot to look forward to as we move through this year. I'm really interested, Tony. I've got two questions. The first is around the breadth confirmation that you're talking about with the equal weight S&P making new highs. Do you see any particular sectors that are contributing more to that breadth improvement? For example, defensives, or is it cyclical led?
Yeah, what's really interesting here is that market breadth has continued to actually improve over the last few months. And largely, we actually have quite a few sectors more on the, I would say, defensive side that are providing that kind of catch-up play, if you will. You have materials and financials being the biggest contributor to this quote-unquote catch-up trade for the rest of the market to play catch-up to the technology sector. But discretionary, healthcare, and industrials are very close behind in terms of their contributions to the improving market breadth that we continue to see here. Gold obviously contributing to that materials sector outperformance here, financials outperforming in this higher interest rate environment. And then, you know, even discretionary and industrials, which are typically cyclical sectors, are also providing that outperformance relative to the S&P 500. So a very broad-based contribution to market breadth, which is a great sign. Generally speaking, you want to see large contributions from multiple sectors on market breadth when they do improve. So overall, that is a fairly really positive sign here for equities to see that type of catch up.
Thank you. And my second question is around NVIDIA specifically, and you've dived in a little bit more about storage layer demand. And I'm just curious to know, as I've been learning more about semiconductors and how they're operating, are there any second order winners in that line of business that you can see also flourishing from these announcements?
Yeah, that's a great question. And the short answer to the question is yes, there are lots of various OEM and component makers that have, you know, second order benefits as NVIDIA continues to see this insatiable demand for their AI chips. And, you know, and the gamut of stocks that span this range, you know, is not only, US companies, but globally. But, you know, with regards to US publicly traded companies that are of relative size, you know, there's a few that I think are worth paying attention to. One, there's Marvell Technologies, a semiconductor stock. They build the storage controllers. So they build the custom SSD controllers that Western Digital and Micron uses in their data center grade drives. These are relatively complex controllers, and Marvell is certainly one of the leading providers of those types of controllers. You also have Astera Labs, the symbol is ALAB, and Rambus, RMBS, that provide the memory controllers that allow these AI servers to access the massive pools of memory that are outside of the GPU chips. Those are also worth taking a look at. And then you also have Monolithic Power, MPWR. They provide the voltage regulators that powers these NVIDIA chips and the high-end memory chips that are on these enterprise SSDs. So you actually have a pretty wide range of semiconductors and component makers that provide the building blocks, if you will, of these AI data centers. And, you know, there's even other things like, for example, even just the motor heads and the spin drives of, you know, these hard drives that provide components for them. But some of them are either not publicly traded, some of them are publicly traded overseas. So these are the ones that I think are worth paying attention to for U.S. Traders who are accessing U.S. markets.
Thank you so much. I appreciate that insight, Tony. So let's get into it. Shifting gears, let's talk about the trade ideas you have for us today. And to get started, I understand, I know we've already mentioned NVIDIA specifically. What opportunity are you seeing with that company today?
Yeah, I want to start off 2026 by looking at NVIDIA again. The stock has been, I would call, range bound for the last 6 months. So even though that the stock has seen substantial growth from a revenue and earnings perspective and from just an overall general outlook perspective, the stock price hasn't moved in 6 months. And I think this is an interesting opportunity for investors, especially long-term investors, to look at NVIDIA, where the valuation looks incredibly compelling. They recently laid out their latest architecture, their Rubin architecture chips. We just started talking about the fact that they started shipping Blackwell chips, their last version or the most current version of their GPU chips. The demand for those Blackwell chips are still ramping up, yet they're already talking about their next level of chips, the Rubin chips, then that's extending the roadmap to 2027 and beyond. And what's interesting is that we're seeing that demand is now expanding beyond the hyperscalers. We're starting to see governments get into this. We're seeing kind of the sovereign wealth funds and the sovereign companies. Or the sovereign wealth funds invest in AI infrastructure. We're seeing this out of the Middle East. We're seeing this in the US. We're seeing this in out of China and quite a few European countries that are now trying to ramp up demand for AI infrastructure locally. And then on top of that, you just have enterprise ramp up as well. So this is all contributing to extended demand for NVIDIA chips outside of the hyperscalers that have been predominantly driving growth over the last couple of years. And supply at this moment remains incredibly tight and constrained. And that's why we continue to see further upside here for NVIDIA. If you look at the stock, it just broke out above that 185 level recently, after holding this level for as a level of resistance for the last 6 months or so. And that's starting to show that there are signs of institutional accumulation again here for NVIDIA. And as it outperforms the S&P 500, as it breaks out, those are some of the things I'm looking for a potential breakout above this consolidation range towards the all-time highs, pushing around that 220 level here to the upside, but really closer to 250 to the upside if you look at it from a valuation perspective, because the stock is trading at 25 times forward earnings, which might sound a little bit expensive on the surface. But when you dig into the fact that we're expecting EPS and revenue growth in the 50% year-over-year range, there's really no stock in its realm that is expecting growth of that size, certainly not at 50% profit margins. So when you consider the fact that how profitable they are, how fast they're growing, and they're only trading at 25 times forward earnings, I think this is really where the valuation looks incredibly compelling, especially if you just compare that to something like, let's say, Apple. Apple trades at 33 times forward earnings. We're talking about a valuation that's nearly 20% higher than what NVIDIA is trading at, yet we're expecting EPS and revenue growth that's around 10%. Profit margins are half as strong as NVIDIA's, yet it trades at a valuation that's 20-25% higher. That just puts into context just how cheap NVIDIA is relative to some of the other more established hardware players in this particular space. So for those reasons, I think that the upside looks incredibly attractive for long-term investors in NVIDIA, given the expected demand for their chips going out in the next couple of years and just the valuation it's currently trading at. So the way that I want to play this is to use a relatively simple option strategy of buying a call option. I'm going out to the March 185 calls, and I'm going to sell a 220 call against that. Earlier today, you can collect about $3.65 to sell that 220 call against the $14.85 that it cost to buy that March 185 call. So your net debit on this trade is around $11.20, or $1,120 of risk per contract, with a maximum profit potential of nearly $2,400 potential on the full trade per contract if the stock is above that 220 level by that March expiration. And I'm looking for some catalysts here in the next couple of months to move the needle on this particular stock to its all-time, to a new all-time high to get to that level.
Tony, this trade, I'm always curious to know, you know, whenever you buy anything, there's this practical component of how do you manage it? And so how would you manage this trade potentially through the cycle of March when you're looking at managing the risk either down or upward?
Yeah, that's a great question. So, you know, with regards to the trade management, the biggest thing here is, you know, this is a debit trade. And debit trades tend to be relatively simple from a trade management perspective. You know, first thing you always want to take a look at is downside management. What happens if this trade does not go in the direction I expected to? In my opinion, it's more important to have a plan for downside first before you look at upside potential. So whenever you're looking at a debit type trade like this, the rule of thumb is that you want to start managing this trade if you lose 50% of the premium that you've paid on this particular trade. So you're paying here about $11.20 for this debit spread. So what that means is that if something you pay $11.20 for loses about half of its value, in this particular case, $5.60, it's time to potentially start looking at closing out this trade. Because if this trade loses around $5.60 versus of value, chances are this trade is not working out the way you expect it to, certainly not in the time frame that you're expecting it to do so. So for those reasons, I would say that, you know, you want to start managing this trade to the downside if it loses half its value. But on the flip side, if it starts to work in your favor, you know, what we say is usually around 75 to 100% gain to the upside is when you want to start locking in some profits and potentially looking at rolling this particular trade to a further expiration and probably moving the strikes up as well. So rolling up and out at that time if it starts to work in your favor. And then to kind of answer your question with regards to risks, you know, probably the biggest risk that we see here to NVIDIA is probably on the geopolitical side. Venezuela certainly likely ratchets up the risk of geopolitical risk, especially with China, you know, which contributes to around 20% of revenues for NVIDIA. So a relatively meaningful, but not majority revenue share of their business, but certainly enough to be meaningful to any downside risk to its valuation. So I think geopolitical risk is probably the one thing that you want to be aware of. And if any of those risks start to bear, even if you haven't necessarily reached that 50% threshold level to the downside, that is one other reason that you may consider getting out of this trade if geopolitical tensions with China ratchet up and specifically NVIDIA gets caught in the middle of that.
Thank you for that. I'm curious to know, I mean, you've laid out a really thorough trade thesis. What could or would invalidate that for you? And is there a specific price level or data point you would look to decide when you make that exit, if at all?
Yeah, absolutely. So if you look at NVIDIA, you know, the stock has been range bound over the last, call it 6 months, between call it 165 to the downside and around 185 to the upside. You know, really what invalidates this trade, if it gets below that 165 level here, you know, that would, you know, from my perspective, you look at a price chart here, that would complete what you would traditionally call a head and shoulders pattern. I think the risk of that is relatively low given the current valuation that's trading at. You would need some really serious macro and geopolitical tensions to get to that point. You know, for a stock that's growing as fast as NVIDIA is doing and as profitable as they are, but you know, that is always the possibility of that happening. And if it does, that would complete what you would call a traditional head and shoulders topping formation. And if that were the case, I would certainly consider getting out of this trade and consider the bullish thesis on NVIDIA invalidated if that happened.
Thank you so much. So we have a treat today because we have another trade idea, I understand. And so I'm looking forward to learning what your second trade idea for us in the new year is.
Yeah, I want to take a look at Block, which is formerly Square. So, you know, they've not only changed the name of their company, they've also changed their symbol. It used to be under SQ Square, the payment processor, but they've rebranded as Block as XYZ. And I want to take a look at this stock because, you know, they've really focused, they've really transformed the business here over the last couple of years to focus on profitability for investors and returning cash to investors and just really synchronizing their entire ecosystem of businesses. And they've been successfully executing that. And I think that's been reflective of the stock price. If you look at the stock here, and the stock took a pretty big tumble, you know, about a year ago, but it's recovered and had a little bit of more of a tumble here in the last couple of months, but now started to show a little bit of strong relative strength. It managed to break out above that 67.5 resistance level that it struggled with over the last couple of months. And right now I'm waiting for that gap fill at around $70, which it's doing right now. If it can get above $70, that's really where we see the momentum continuing up to its recent highs around 82.5 here to the upside. And like I said, you know, they've really been focusing on margin. You know, the stock has been losing money over the last couple of years, but you know, they've recently turned the business around where net profit margins are, you know, north of 13%, something we haven't seen in multiple years for this particular stock. And more importantly, they've really been focusing on merging the Cash App with Square. So the whole ecosystem of businesses is starting to converge. The fact that they focused on revenue growth and profitability as what the CEO calls the rule of 40, seeing revenue growth and profit margins above 40% is what they're shooting for. And it seems like they've already had early success in reaching those goals before their targets. And more importantly, the valuation currently just lags the fundamentals. The valuation is currently still trading at 20 times forward earnings. Yet if you're looking at revenue growth and EPS growth, we're talking about, you know, EPS growth in the 40% range. You know, there's really not many stocks in this particular space growing at that type of pace, especially ones where they're continuing to expand profit margins at the pace that they're doing right now. So they've seen some aggressive cost cutting lately, and that's been showing up in that bottom line with regards to the profit margins. And so for those reasons, that's really where we see a huge upside potential here for the stock. And I think the price action in the stock is really reflecting that right now. So I think the way to play this is to go out to the February expiration. I'm looking at selling a put spread here. I'm looking at selling the 70 by 65 put spread in expiring in February. So that means I'm selling the $70 put and buying the 65 put against it. I'm collecting about $3.50 to sell that 70 put, paying about $1.70 for that 65 put. Net net, I'm collecting $1.80 for this $5 wide credit spread. That's going to give me a risk reward ratio of around $320 of risk per contract while trying to make about $180 of profit potential on this if the stock stays above $70 by that February expiration, while risking 320 if the stock is below 65. You know, if the stock's below 65, then the thesis is clearly not working out here. It's trading back into that trading range. And that means that even though the management team has managed to turn the business around, investors are not quite buying that story just yet. So those are the levels I'm paying attention to, and that's how I'd like to structure this trade.
Thank you for laying out that trade for us. And I've noticed in both of your trades today that we're bullish on both of these. And so I'm curious to know, in both strategies, you've one used a put spread and in the other you've used a call spread. Can you talk to us about how you decide when to use one or the other?
Yeah, that's a great question. So with regards to whether you want to sell a put spread, meaning you're selling options, or you're buying a call spread where you're buying options, it really comes down to the outlook that you have on the particular stock. You know, generally, when stocks that you believe have huge, let's put it this way, stocks that you think have sizable upside potential and you believe that it can move relatively quickly, those are ones where call spreads are going to be generally more favorable. You're risking less to potentially make more. And you reserve that strategy for stocks that you think can make a big move in a relatively short amount of time. And that's what NVIDIA represents. On the flip side, when you're selling put spreads, those are more for stocks that you think that are going to move in one direction, but perhaps move in a slower, more grinding fashion, if you will, rather than explosive moves to the upside. And that's what I see in something like Block. You know, a fintech payment processor typically are not the types of stocks that you see explosive moves to the upside, generally speaking. So in general, you generally take a look at kind of your outlook on the stock to choose the strategy. There's another factor that you can look at, which is the volatility of the option. Generally speaking, stocks that have high implied volatility favor selling options, and stocks with relatively low implied volatility favor buying options. Now, in this particular case, NVIDIA, because NVIDIA generally is, you know, has been fairly stable, the implied volatility on the option is relatively low, favoring buying the option, versus Block has been, you know, fairly volatile, and the options are a little bit more expensive. So that's why it also favors selling puts.
Thank you. So I'm curious to know, particularly with, or I should say specifically with the Block trade, outside of the cost, what other risks are inherent in that trade that you've set up for us?
Yeah, you know, that's a great question. You know, one of the things that's been contributing some of the strong growth in Block is the Cash App, and they specifically have been leveraging kind of what they call microloans, which is just another way of saying buy now, pay later, like Klarna or Afterpay. So you know, that particular segment of the business has been growing incredibly fast, but it also has some regulatory risk. You know, it's essentially one regulatory rule away from being you know, irrelevant in terms of growth. The other thing is also we're continuing to see credit quality decline a little bit here, especially in the lower income cohorts of consumers, and that's also one of the levers that they have to adjust to ensure that, you know, loan quality or loan growth continues, because if credit quality continues to decline, they're going to have to decrease the amount of loans that they give. So for those reasons, you know, the primary driver of growth right now, there are some risks to that. And I think that's really one of the things that you need to pay attention to in this macro environment for Block.
Okay. Thank you, Tony. So today, we also have a question from our audience that I'd like to throw at you, Tony, if you're ready. This one comes from Jonah, and he writes, "If I'm apprehensive about options due to the risk involved, what's a good strategy for easing myself into investing into options while minimizing risk? He would like to dip his toes into options without risking or losing more money than he's comfortable with."
I think that's a fantastic question, and I have two answers for that. One, which is probably the obvious answer, and one, which is what I think is the one that most people haven't thought of. The first one is the obvious answer is to look at selling a cover call on stocks that you already own, because it's the only strategy that doesn't add additional risk to your portfolio as an option strategy. You're essentially collecting income against the stock that you already own to and by doing so, you're taking on the obligation to potentially sell the stock at a future in the future at a specific price that you're comfortable with. And you're going to generate some additional income for your portfolio. And this is a great way to start dipping your toes into options, because by selling the option, you're going to start to get a feel for how the option performs as the stock moves higher and lower and as approaches expiration. And those are the two biggest things that that's hardest to learn as a beginner options trader, is to understand how the relationship between the stock and the option works, and how the relationship of time has on the effect of your option. And selling a covered call is a great way to get started without adding additional risk to your portfolio. And the second strategy that I think is in my opinion, the most underutilized option strategy by investors. So this really has nothing to do with options trading. It really has to do with if you're an investor in stocks and ETFs, selling put options as a way to acquire those stocks and ETFs at a discount. So if you're already buying stocks and ETFs today, if you're placing a limit order to do that, consider selling a put option instead, because you have the same obligations as placing a limit order, but you're going to get paid income to do so. So you're actually taking on less risk selling a put option than you do to buy 100 shares of that stock using a limit order. And that's, like I said, the most underutilized option strategy by investors. So those are the two that I encourage beginners to take a look, because both of those are going to be reducing risk, adding income to your portfolio, versus just the outright buying and selling the stocks that you already have in your portfolio.
Thank you, Tony. And that was a great question, Jonah. Thank you so much for submitting that. So for our audience, this does bring our conversation today to a close. And I want to say thank you again to all of our viewers for tuning in. Thank you for those who submitted questions. Tony, thank you again for bringing us your thoughts and trade ideas.
Thank you so much, Roberta, for a great start to 2026 and looking forward to the new year.
I am too. To our audience, please don't forget to tune in to the Trading Strategy Desk follow-up session, which will be tomorrow, and that is Friday at 1:30 Eastern Standard Time. You can sign up for that session by going to fidelity.com/InTheMoneyFollowup. Also, if you're looking for further insights, or if you missed the live show today, you can sign up for the Active Investor Weekly newsletter to receive highlights of the trades that we discussed today. And you can find that at fidelity.com/Active Investor Weekly. As we already said, Tony, we're definitely looking forward to the year ahead and looking forward to our show tomorrow, or I'm sorry, our show next week. And we'll see you back here then for the next episode of In the Money.
Past performance is no guarantee of future results. Options trading entails significant risk and is not appropriate for all investors. Certain complex option strategies carry additional risk. Before trading options, contact Fidelity Investments by calling 800-544-5115 to receive a copy of characteristics and risks of standardized options. Supporting documentation for any claims, if applicable, will be furnished upon request. There are additional costs associated with option strategies that call for multiple purchases and sales of options, such as spreads, straddles, and collars, as compared with a single option trade. Technical analysis focuses on market action, specifically volume and price. Technical analysis is only one approach to analyzing stocks. When considering which stocks to buy or sell, you should use the approach that you're most comfortable with. As with all of your investments, you must make your own determination as to whether an investment in any particular security or securities is right for you based on your investment objectives, risk tolerance, and financial situation. Past performance is no guarantee of future results. Greeks are mathematical calculations used to determine the effect of various factors on options. Indexes are unmanaged. It is not possible to invest directly in an index. Views expressed are as of the date indicated, based on the information available at that time, and may change based on market or other conditions. A cover call writer foregoes participation in any increase in the stock price above the call exercise price, and continues to bear the downside risk of stock ownership if the stock price decreases more than the premium received. Unless otherwise noted, the opinions provided are those of Options Play, and not necessarily those of Fidelity Investments or its affiliates. Fidelity does not assume any duty to update any of the information. News, commentary, market data, and research reports are from third-party sources unaffiliated with Fidelity, unless otherwise noted, and are provided for informational purposes only. Fidelity does not endorse or adopt third-party content. Fidelity makes no guarantee that the information supplied is accurate, complete, or timely, and does not provide any warranties regarding results obtained from their use. Any screenshots, charts, or company trading symbols mentioned are provided for illustrative purposes only, and should not be considered as an offer to sell, a solicitation of an offer to buy, or a recommendation for the security. Options Play and Fidelity Investments are independent entities and are not legally affiliated. The third-party trademarks appearing herein are the property of their respective owners. Fidelity Brokerage Services, LLC. Member NYSE SIPC. Copyright 2024 FMR LLC. All rights reserved. 1109225.1.0. Information provided in the podcast is general in nature, is provided for informational purposes only, and should not be construed as investment or tax advice. Fidelity Investments disclaims any liability for any direct or incidental loss incurred by applying any of the information in this podcast. This podcast is intended for U.S. persons only and is not a solicitation for any Fidelity product or service. This podcast is provided for your personal non-commercial use and is the copyrighted work of FMR LLC. You may not reproduce this podcast in whole or in part in any form without the permission of FMR LLC.